The FCC, I think, is one of the most important parts of our government.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. We are chatting today with Mr. Newton Minow at Sidley Austin here in Chicago, and I encourage everyone to learn all about what he has done. We are surrounded by so many amazing photos and pieces of history, and today I am extremely excited to explore the time around his first 100 days as chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, also known as the FCC. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. For those who don't know, would you mind giving us a bit of background as to what led you up to being appointed chairman of the FCC?
Well, I knew President Kennedy before he was elected, and I had been involved for years with Adlai Stevenson, who had been the Democratic candidate. He'd been the governor of Illinois, and he'd been the Democratic candidate for president in 52 and 56. I've been one of his assistants when he was governor and then was his law partner. Through that, I met the Kennedys and the Shriver family, Jack Kennedy's sister, Eunice, and her husband who lived in Chicago. So I'd had an exposure to politics. And when Kennedy was elected, the next day, Sergeant Shriver, Kennedy's brother-in-law, called me and he said, President-elect has appointed me talent scout. I'm the recruiter for the new government, and we'd like you to come to Washington. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't afford it. And I said, don't even think about me. And he said, well, will you at least help me with the recruiting? And I said, yes. And that's really how I got involved.
Awesome. Well, so then, for those who don't know, what are some of the responsibilities and roles that chairman of the FCC has?
The FCC, I think, is one of the most important parts of our government. Mm-hmm. Most people don't realize if you make a telephone call, if you use your computer.
Like everyone, if, yeah.
If you listen to radio, if you watch television, anything involved with communications means that you're involved with the Federal Communications Commission, which reaches everybody's life every single minute mm-hmm. of every single day.
Yeah, especially with the cell phones and...
Right. It's especially important in election years because it administers the equal time law for political candidates. It's especially important in the changing technology with the internet and with the enormous revolution in communications. So it's a vital agency. It's by law a bipartisan agency. And it there's an argument about it. But it technically reports to Congress rather than to the president.
Mm-hmm. And so then because of that, you're appointed through the president, but then you also have to go through hearings with Congress, correct?
You have to be approved by the Senate mm-hmm. and confirmed by the Senate. And when I served, there were seven commissioners, and the law required that no more than four could be of one political party. So you'd have... Mm-hmm. four Democrats and three Republicans. That's since been changed to a commission of five, so it can be three and two, mm-hmm. Or an independent. But you cannot, it's by law bipartisan.
So then, did someone give you a guidebook on how to get prepared for this role? What did that look like for you, you know, when they, you know, tapped you on the shoulder and said, we think you'd be really great at this?
Well, I had always, even as far back as being in the Army in World War II in law school, I've always been interested. And television began right after World War II. And the first time I saw it, I said to myself, this is the most important invention probably of our time. It's going to change everybody's life. And I remember at that time, General David Sarnoff, who was head of RCA and NBC, had demonstrated the beginning of television before the war at the World's Fair in 1939. Mm-hmm. He'd said, now we add sight to sound. Sight to sound. And what television did was to enable everybody to see and hear what was going on. To me, I once read that a television was like a periscope, that it could, you could have it in your home, but it could see what was going on elsewhere in the world.
Right. And so then once you realized this was something you were interested in, you know, and you were going through the appointment process and all that jazz, did someone tell you, this is how you should prepare for this role? These are the things we want to get done. What was that like?
Nobody told me. Actually, I helped Sarge with the recruiting for different jobs. And somebody in the recruiting knew, Bob Kennedy knew. I was very deeply interested in television. Bob Kennedy knew that. Because during one of the, in the 56 Stevenson campaign, Bob Kennedy was part of the Stevenson staff. And because the two of us were the same age, we frequently were roommates on the travel. And one day, we got to Springfield, Illinois. The plane landed, and Bob Kennedy said to me, you and I have heard this Stevenson speech 500 times. How far is Lincoln's house from where we are? And I said, it's only a couple minutes walk. He said, suppose you and I play hooky. You can take me over to Lincoln's house, and we can get back in time for the plane. So the two of us went, and on the way back, we were talking, and Bob Kennedy said to me, this is 56. Mm-hmm. He said, we each had children about the same age. And he said, you know, it used to be that a child's greatest influence was in three places, the home, the school, the church. He said, now in my house, I see there's a fourth great influence. It's television.
Wow.
And I said, you're not only right, but I said, let me give you a number. I said, in many homes, children spend more time with television than they do with their parents or with their school. So it is unquestionably. And as a result of that, he knew I was deeply interested in this. And somebody in the recruiting staff knew that I was interested in this. And Sarge then said to me, would you consider being on the Federal Communications Commission? And I said, that's the only job I would consider. I'm not interested in any other job. But I can't believe you're going to appoint, I was 34 years old, I can't believe you're going to appoint a 34-year-old to be the FCC. And then when they did ask me, I said, will it be chairman? And they said, yes. I said, I won't do it unless I'm chairman.
Nice.
I can't afford it. And President Kennedy appointed me before he was inaugurated. He appointed me around Christmas time of 1960. And I told my boss then, Governor Stevenson, who was going to become ambassador to the United Nations. And he said, no, I don't want you to do that. He said, I want you to stay here and keep the law firm going, because when I leave my new job, I want to come back. And he said, besides, he said, I can't believe they're going to appoint you chairman of the FCC. You're only 34 years old. And I said, he said, you better check that out. I don't think it's correct. And I did check it out, and it was true, and I went ahead.
So what does it mean by checking it out? Did you have various conversations with them? Did they, I mean, they don't just send you a job application, right?
There was no job application, and there were no instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no instructions. So then I started thinking of it when it was announced. It was the first time I took it seriously. was I realized that I better get some advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like a good idea.
somebody I knew when I went to law school, named Henry Geller, had worked at the FCC. And so he was then working at the Department of Justice. And I called him, and I asked him if he would come back to the FCC if I was coming. And he said he would. The FCC at that time was in terrible shape.
Okay.
President Eisenhower had been forced to fire the existing chairman of the FCC. There had been corruption.
Oh.
People going to jail. There had been corruption in the broadcasting industry. There had been payola scandals in radio.
Mm-hmm.
There had been quiz scandals in television. The industry was in trouble. The agency was in trouble. So the place was at rock bottom. Its reputation in Congress was very bad. So I was starting at a time and a place where you could only go up. You couldn't go down.
So did you think of it as a blank slate, or were there already ideas by the other people on the committee for what you wanted to do?
I've been following the industry because of my interest reading. I particularly followed a journalist named Jack Gould in the New York Times, who had written a lot about the scandals at the FCC, and also about the failure of the FCC to promote the public interest as opposed to the industry's own interest. So I was influenced by that, and I knew that if I took this job, I was going to do my best to change everything. And I went there with that in mind.
So then when you showed up in Washington on day one of the job, what did that day look like? Do you have a notebook and write goals?
Well, even before I took the job, I realized I better touch base in Congress. So I went to Washington, and I met with the Speaker of the House, who at that time was Sam Rayburn. I had met him with Governor Stevenson when we visited Lyndon Johnson's ranch in the 50s. And Speaker Rayburn, I had been a law clerk at the Supreme Court for Chief Justice Vinson,
mm-hmm.
who had been a friend of Rayburn's. So I told Speaker Rayburn that I'd been with Chief Justice Vinson, and that immediately broke the ice. And then he put his arm around me, and he said, "You and I are going to get along just fine as long as you remember one thing." And I said, "What's that, sir?" He said, "You work for me."
Oh, one. Wonderful.
So I got the message. Then I went to see the chairman of the Senate committee that supervised the FCC, and I had heard that he had had a candidate for this job that he wanted
mm-hmm.
that didn't get
didn't pan out very well.
So I figured I better deal with that immediately. I checked this guy out. His name was Kenneth Cox, who came from the state of Washington, which was where Senator Magnuson, the chairman of the committee, came from. And I did my homework about Ken Cox. So I said to Senator Magnuson, I said, "We better start off by my telling you I know I'm not your choice for this job, that you have somebody." But I said, "I've already talked to Ken Cox. I called him, and I'm bringing him into a major job at the FCC. and I will help on the next vacancy to see that he gets the next appointment. Well, that broke the ice with Senator Magnuson. So I could start off in the... Then, of course, I had to be confirmed by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And what the custom is that the senators from your state accompany you to the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And in Illinois at that time, we had a Democratic senator, Paul Douglas, and a Republican senator, Everett Dirksen. And, of course, I had met Paul Douglas. I really didn't know him well, but I had met him. I'd never met Senator Dirksen. They both came to the hearing. In fact, I've got the picture of the two of them out there. In the. They both put their arm around me and testified for me. And I was approved by the Senate. I then got Henry Geller, and with his help, we brought in some key people for the staff, and we set out to change things at the FCC. And I realized that the beginning, the first few months, were mm-hmm. the most important part.
Would you then speak to what those items were that you thought really made them the most important days?
To me, the most important thing was to, particularly in the broadcasting business.
Okay.
We regulated the telephone industry as well, but that was going fairly well. But the first day on the job, a senior commissioner on the commission came to see me, and he said, "Do you know what a communication satellite is?" And I said, "No." And he groaned, and he said, "Oh, my God." He said, he said, "This is the one area in space where we are ahead of the Russians." To give you the picture at that time, this is 1961.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians had sent a man into space. The United States had not.
Mm.
The United States was desperately trying to catch up with the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
It was an embarrassment to the United States, and Commissioner Craven said to me, "This is the one place where we're ahead of the Russians." And he said, "Well, if you'll teach me, I'll work on it." And he did teach me, and I realized how important this was. And I told this to the people in the White House, and President Kennedy then invited me to go with him on a trip to the space stations. And President Kennedy called me aside. He said, "Why are you bugging me about this? Why is this so important?" I said, "Mr. President, sending a communication satellite into space is more important than sending a man into space."
Wow.
And he said, "Why do you say that?" I said, "Communication satellites send ideas. Ideas last longer than people."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "This is more important." And we did work on it. We had legislation. I testified 13 times before different committees in Congress.
Busy, busy man.
And the legislation passed in 1962, and the first communication satellite went up in 1962, connecting the United States with the rest of the world, where you could not only make telephone calls, but you could see and hear and see what was going on. And that was to me, was a major accomplishment. The other thing I wanted to do was to remind broadcasters, particularly television broadcasters, that they had been given a great gift. They'd been given for free, no charge, monopoly use of a television channel.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange, under the law, they were to serve the public interest, not their private interest. And I wanted to be sure to remind them that we needed educational programming. We also passed what became known as the all-channel law, which meant that television sets had to be able to receive all channels, not just VHF channels. That enabled us to build a public broadcasting network, now PBS.
Mm-hmm.
Which it didn't exist at that time. I was astonished. President Kennedy and I had both come from communities where there was an educational television station, mm-hmm. President Kennedy in Boston and I from Chicago, we discovered there was no such station in Washington, D.C., in the capital of the United States.
Wow.
None in New York, the biggest city in the United States. None in Los Angeles. None in Philadelphia. None in Baltimore. So we set us out changing that. And I regard that as a major achievement of the FCC at that time. We built what is now PBS. We got communication satellites going. And we got the first federal help for educational television. All legislation that was passed. In fact, President Kennedy called me at home one night, and he said, you got three bills passed. How the hell did you do that? I said, because I stay out of politics. I said, everything is bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
We get as much help from the Republicans as the Democrats. I've managed somehow to avoid, there's not a Democratic way or a political way or a Republican way to have a communications satellite.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a Democratic way or a Republican way to have public television.
Right.
We've got to, and he said, I wish I could do that. I said, well, you're dealing with a different set of issues, Mr. President.
Right. So do you think there was anything specific in those first 100 days that really made it so you could get those three things passed?
Looking back, the most important thing that happened in the first 100 days was I was invited to give a speech to the broadcasters.
Mm.
And that speech made a lot of news and attracted a great deal of attention in the Congress. And what it said was there's a new sheriff in town here.
Yeah.
And the rules are changing. Broadcast licenses will not automatically be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to show us that you serve the public interest. One thing I wanted to do and I failed. I wanted to limit the number of commercials.
Okay.
And the broadcasters themselves had a broadcast code which limited commercials to 6 minutes an hour.
Okay.
And I tried and said, I didn't set the 6 minutes. That's your rule, not mine. But let's enforce it because you guys don't enforce it. And if you don't enforce it, the government will enforce it. That's
right.
What they do in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries have limits on commercials.
Mm-hmm.
The United States does not. I did not ever get enough votes for that at the commission or enough votes in Congress. If I had to do over again,
mm-hmm.
if I were still at the commission today, I would limit the number of commercials.
I would be all for it. I mean, this is why people have the streaming services now. And
that's exactly right.
Wow.
And the broadcasters would have been smart, I think, if they'd limited it, because now it's excessive.
So then would you conclude that those first 100 days were pivotal to your success at the FCC or even anything further down the road? Or do you think that through time and just continuing to work at things?
I think the first 100 days were exceedingly important. They set the tone and the message that there was a cop on the beat.
Mm-hmm.
And that corruption would not be permitted. Corruption in the industry, corruption in the government agency, that standards existed. And of course, the legislation, that to me was the most important, that I had set out legislation which passed. It's
mm-hmm.
very hard to get bills passed in Congress. Very hard. Perhaps harder today than ever before. But at that time, with bipartisan help,
mm-hmm.
We were able to get three major bills passed. Now, one thing I didn't add earlier, at that time, the job of chairman of the FCC paid $20,500 a year.
Okay.
even granted with inflation, that was not a salary to raise your family. We had three children. And I told Star Schreiber to tell the president before they appointed me, if they were going to appoint me, I was good for 2 years, but mm-hmm. that was about it. And 2 years to the day, I called and asked for an appointment to see President Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Casual.
And when I walked in, the president said to me, I had seen him around a different thing, but he said, you're the only person I brought here who never asked to see me or asked mm-hmm. for an appointment. Whenever I've seen you, it's been with either socially or with a group or whatever. But you're the only, he said, you want to go home, right? I said, that's right.
Yeah.
I told you 2 years. Today is 2 years to the day.
Wow.
He said, are you sure you don't want another job? And I said, no, Mr. President, I can't afford it. I can't do it. He said, and I said, I'm going to go to some job where I won't have anything to do with the FCC.
Right.
I don't want anybody ever to say, I'll use this job to get somewhere else. I'm going back to something I was doing before. And he said, I'd really like you to stay, but if you can't, would you at least stay till I get a replacement for you? I said, of course. Well, mm-hmm. that took 6 months.
Mm.
And so I was there for that time. But then we came home back to Chicago. And I look back on it with the main regret is that I left before he was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was really a huge fan. The most exciting experience I had was during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, do tell.
When the Russians had placed missiles in Cuba, we came very, very terribly close to a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
And my assignment, the White House called me back from, I was in New York meeting with the European broadcasters about communication satellites. They called me back, go directly to the White House, and they asked me to figure out how to get 6 American commercial radio stations to carry the Voice of America speech of the president to Cuba, because the Russians were blocking the Voice of America.
Well, how did you do that?
And I did that. It's the only time that's ever been done. The White House gave me the assignment of doing this in secret. And, of course, I realized after we had made the technical arrangements to connect the Voice of America mm-hmm. transmitter with these 6 stations, we did that secretly.
Okay.
But at that point, I called the White House, you're going to have to trust me. I'm going to have to get these stations to know what's going on.
Right.
So I called each one and I said, I want the owner of the station, the licensee, and give me the number. Because I'm swearing you to secrecy. Don't tell your news people.
Mm-hmm.
We have a national emergency. I'm going to call you from the White House at 6 p.m. on a conference call with some other stations. And I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. So they had the owner, and we called Pierre Salinger, the White House press secretary, and I got on the phone together.
Mm-hmm.
We said, there's a national emergency. The Russians have missiles in Cuba. The president's going to speak in several hours. Your station is hooked up with the Voice of America transmitter.
Wow.
It's done.
Yeah, sorry, no turning back.
We'll turn it back to you, but the president's going to be on the air. We want your cooperation. And don't tell anybody. They all said yes.
Wow.
The morning I was summoned to the White House to the report, and the president looked at me and he said, it worked.
Wow, yeah.
I didn't ask how or why, but
I
assumed they had somebody on the ground that in Cuba who reported back at CIA or somebody.
Right.
So I said, fine. I walked out, and on the way out, the president said, let's do it again. As long as this thing lasts.
So how long were you doing that then?
7 days.
Wow.
When it was all over, the stations called me and said, where do we send the bill? I said, what bill? And they said, well, we knocked off all the commercials, there was no revenue. So, you know, we all, I said, well, I don't have any money for that. And I called the White House and I said, Pierre, I said, if the president's willing to have, invite these guys to lunch and president thanks them personally, I think we can get out of
settle the bill.
Anyway. Yeah. So that's what we did.
That's great.
And president thanked them all. And that was the most exciting part of. And then I spoke to the broadcasters about it and told them this story and said, you guys rose to the occasion. And we're very proud of you. The other exciting thing I had happen was the president, before I gave that speech to the broadcasters, the president spoke the day before. To the broadcasters were meeting, their national meeting was in Washington, and he called and invited me to go with him to with his speech. And it turned out to be the day after the first American had been in space, Alan Shepard.
Wow.
And I was waiting outside the president's office. He came out. He said, "What do you think about taking the Shepherds to the broadcasters?" I said, "That'd be great."
Yeah.
So he said, "Just wait here a minute." And I waited, and then he came out. He said, "Okay, we're all going to go together. He said, you come with me. I want to change my shirt." So he took me up to the living quarters, and he's changing his shirt. And he says, "What do you think I should say to the broadcasters?" And I said, "You should say that in our country, when we do something in space, we have to invite the broadcasters to cover it. In Russia, it's all a secret.
Right, yeah.
And you ought to thank the broadcasters for enabling everybody in this country to see what happened."
Right.
So the president didn't say yes, he didn't say no.
Yeah.
He got up and he gave the perfect speech, making exactly that point.
Those comments.
He had no notes or anything. And so that was a great thrill for me.
Especially with that background. I mean, would you say that that catapulted your interest into the public television world further down in your career?
Absolutely. And subsequently, I was asked, and I subsequently became chairman of PBS. And I'm very proud of that. I think public broadcasting is a great thing for the country, including, and I'm so proud that people like Senator Goldwater helped us. I mean, we've managed, PBS today is, believe it or not, the most trusted institution in America.
I believe it.
And so I'm very proud of that. And it's because we've stayed out of politics.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Wow.
Thanks for inviting me. Good luck with your life.
Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.